Welcome in to another edition of Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick. I'm your host, Cassio. Nick, how are you, brother?
Man, I'm doing great. Good to see you, man. Everything going good with you?
I'm going great, man. Since we talked last, I took over the Mike Chioda mailbag. I got all the mailbags, man, and we're going to have a fun one today, brother, because not only are we going to get to some questions, but at the end, since it is March Madness, we're going to get a bracket. I've put together 16. I've talked with you a little bit, some other people. I got 16 of the top referees. This isn't all of them. This is just 16 for this particular bracket. And we're going to go through and get a winner in your little top sweet 16 of all-time referees. How about that?
Okay.
But first, we want to make sure we get into what's going on a little bit with Deep South Wrestling, man. You got an event coming up.
Yeah, we got one coming up on the 14th, man. Skrilla the Great's going to be defending his title. We've got a new sponsor for the ladies division, and we're going to have a ladies match with Rose. You know, we've been having Jim and Jules out there, and she's kind of laid claim to you know, like this is her turf here at Deep South, the six-foot blonde bombshell. But we're bringing in Rose Gold, and she's been here with us before. And Rose is maybe six. I don't know which one's the tallest. They're like, you know,
really?
They're both. Yeah. And Rose has incredible athleticism. There's just some serious, and she's got a tremendous look. She's a future star. You know, everybody that we have on our card has the potential to break through, you know, or we wouldn't have them on the card.
Yeah.
But a fresh new look, and the ladies division is expanding. And like I said, Skrilla the Great's going to be defending his title against Owen Knight, and that's going to be a huge matchup. I don't know how familiar you are with the Georgia indie scene, but that is that's a big time matchup right there.
That's a huge matchup. So we got a lot going on. We'll hit more about that before we get out of here, but just wanted to lay the groundwork there. Coming up, if you're listening to this close to real time, which is dropping on April 8th, then that means this weekend is your next chance to see Deep South Wrestling. Let's get into some questions for you before we get into this bracket. First, we got a new one, Matt Blackstock. He said, "Hey, Nick and Cassio, I'm Matt. Nice to meet you, Nick, and happy to ask you a question." He said, "I'm also autistic too, and I'm happy about it. I do ask questions with Polly B and Chioda every other Monday. So this is my first time to ask you a question, Nick."
All right. Let's hear it.
Welcome, Matt. First of all, man, welcome.
Yeah, welcome, man. Good to hear from you.
Welcome to the party. Matt says, "At WCW TV events, you ring the bell at the hard camera. Why the timekeeper, the bell ringer, is not at ringside? Are they sitting at hard camera?"
No, that's just for a visual. They're usually sitting right by the announcers, wherever the announcers are sitting. The timekeeper, it depends on the setup, the building setup. You know, when you're doing indie setups, the timekeeper is pretty close to the announcers, you know, because everybody's kind of working together doing stuff. But, you know, at the main level, the timekeeper and the guy ringing the bell is right there at ringside.
Yeah.
But so are the announcers, but they're not. They're all kind of like on the same side, but opposite ends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for looking at the hard camera, it's just for a visual. So boom, you know, the people don't have any idea where the person actually ringing the bell is. So the, you know, that way you're not just pointing off that way. You know,
right, right.
I mean, you know, you go, boom. So that's why we do that.
Is like at Deep South, where do they set up? Is it set up right by your announcer?
Depends on the setup.
Okay.
Our announcers are off to the side, and our ring announcer and timekeeper, they're all right there, basically at the same big table.
Same area.
Right there next to each other.
All right. And Matt says, "I got a good question about food. What's your favorite place to get some food? I hope I will ask you more questions again. Nice to meet you, Nick."
Favorite place. Okay. Well, that's a pretty open question. You know, if I was going to go sit down and eat a gourmet meal, there's different places to go. But if I'm just going to go get something fast food that's different, there's two places that I like to hit, and it's kind of a toss-up. One of them I just started hitting, you know, because it's been around for a while. But I like going to Zaxby's because I can either get one of those big-ass salads that's got the chicken nuggets in it, or else I can get chicken strips, and I like their chicken strips. Or I like going to that Panda Express, too. A little Chinese, yeah, because it's not all that expensive. You know, for like $10, you can get fried rice and two sides.
Yeah,
and they got some pretty decent sides there, you know. And I don't do Chinese a whole lot, so every once in a while, you know, it you know, just to break up the, you know, kind of, when you're slightly autistic or you have or taking care of somebody's autistic, you get into, you know, something like my son Nick eats the same thing every night. I can't do that, you know.
But
I do have, I have a broader menu than he has, but I have the same things that always get rotated. You know, I just have more stuff than he does. So every now and then to throw in a Chinese or something good, you know, it's different. So, and I just started hitting that Panda Bear. So it's, and it, I wiped it out first time. I've been twice now. I say, okay, it's in the mix now.
It's officially in rotation.
Yeah, there's way better Chinese places to go to, but it's good and it's quick and it's right up the street. You know, and,
there you,
and
go.
You know, so you know, I'm gonna have to throw Zaxby's and Panda Express in there. Be my two, like, you know, fast food places that I'm liking.
I think for everybody, kind of fast food is kind of the same. They're all in the same, you know, ballpark.
Yeah.
I think for sure it depends on your neighborhood, because you know this Wendy's might have bad workers and this one's got good workers, and so you got to kind of go what's consistent around your kind of hub. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's kind of what you start.
You know what I just found out? Wendy's sells their chili in a can you can buy in a grocery store.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you know what? I tried it, and for some reason, and I don't know why this is, but the chili that you get out of the can at the grocery store that says Wendy's on it tastes better than the damn chili you buy, get at the restaurant for some reason. Yeah. In fact, last night for my mom, I warmed up one of those chilies, and she likes them little stuffed baked potato deals, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I made a couple of them, and I put them on top of a little bowl of chili. So we do all that. You know, there's then a fruit bowl off to the side, you know, and she wiped it out, and so did I. But I got to thinking to myself, I said, damn, this canned, because I'm not big on canned chili, you know, I'm not, you know, it's, I like the real deal, you know, and canned, but this, it's pretty damn decent. And I thought to myself, why, how are they messing it up at the restaurants? You know,
that is interesting, because I always heard the rumor was they took the leftover burgers and put the meat in the chili and made the chili.
I think everything they do is pre-made. I'm sure that they
think
it is. Oh, I'm pretty sure they just get cans of chili sent to them. I don't think anybody's in the back chopping stuff up and making it up fresh. You know, if they are, then they need to be fired because they're doing a hell of a terrible job.
They're not doing a very good job.
No, hell no.
All right. First of all, and thanks, Matt. Welcome to the party again. And we do hope you ask questions every other week here with at Nick Patrick's mailbag. Bobby KF5GTX said, Nick, I usually drink sweet iced tea and cold flavored water during the day. What do you drink in the morning to get you going? Thanks for a great podcast.
In the morning time when I get up, I drink water a lot. But when I make my breakfast, I drink two little V8 energy drinks, the little fruit. Little, you know, not the tomato kind, but the little fruit flavored energy drinks.
Okay.
And I drink two of them to give me more of a little zip, because they're not quite as strong as like a Red Bull or something. They're like kind of like a weak cup of coffee, but I like the taste of them. And I rotate the flavors up so I don't get bored with it and burn out on it. But my main one that I get is the peach mango flavor.
Ooh.
I like that. It tastes real good. I like the pineapple too, but they got a black cherry and they got different kind. But usually the mango is one that I go with. I drink two of them.
And then what do you, besides water, is there anything else you drink during the day?
Yeah, at dinner time I'll drink one. I only drink one soft drink a day, and I'll save it for dinner time.
Okay.
And it's either a ginger ale or a root beer. It's usually a ginger. Three out of four times, it's a ginger ale.
Okay.
But every now and then, I'll throw a root beer in there.
Oh, man. I love a good root beer, man.
A good cold one? Oh, yeah. Man.
It's got to be freezing.
And a root beer float. I hadn't done them in a long time, because I get me some of that lactose-free ice cream so it won't kill me. and I make me a little root beer float, and oh, my God, that tastes good.
You're not a coffee guy, huh?
No, not at all. Never have been. I've tried it. And what's so weird is I love the smell of it brewing.
Right.
And I really love the smell of it when they're grinding it up. That, to me, is the smell. But damn, that taste to me does not match the smell. Yeah, it just don't match the smell. And And I just didn't. Now I've never ever been a coffee guy. I've had been forced to drink a couple times, but man, that'd be enough to break your habits anyway.
You need a kick in the pants when you're drinking that. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
Let's see what we got here. What do we got? Let's keep it going. Over here, we've got a couple more questions coming in. Awesome place. Here we go. Adam Krasnoff. Adam says, Nick, after participating in the Starrcade 97 watch along with Eric Bischoff, did you experience any revelations or insight about the Sting Hollywood Hogan incident that hadn't previously occurred to you? And if so, could you elaborate on what it was and how it impacted your understanding of the situation? So for those that don't know, you did that watch along with Eric a while ago. Is there anything that popped off new to you out of that, but from hearing him talk about it?
When I watch it back, it wasn't nearly as horrible as it felt
in the moment,
because there was so much pressure going on, you know, and I told the story of what was going on, you know, I'm like, okay, no matter what I do out of this thing, I'm going to get fired because somebody's not going to be happy. Yeah. And either person that's not happy could get me fired, you know? So it was a terrible, stressful situation. And I wasn't into the flow and the feel of it live because of that, you know? And when I left, I thought, and I still think that it could have been way better. And with the buildup that it had, it fell short of the mark of what it should have been. But it wasn't the complete disaster that I felt for all those years that it was, because I look at it now from a different point of view, too, because I'm a promoter now, too. And I know that there was a lot of politics and a lot of bullshit that was involved in it. But at the end of the day, Sting got the pop. He got the only person really that got hurt out of it was Bret Hart, and he didn't get hurt so bad that it couldn't be fixed, you know. And the people at the end, if you listen to the crowd, the people who had that "what the hell" moment, you know,
yeah.
And but then it was like, whoa, they blew the roof off at the end, which is what you look for. And another thing, here we are, what is it, 25 years later, 20,
yeah,
we're still talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, so as far as that aspect goes, Hulk left with just as much heat as he did. We know he kept his heat by the way things went down, and everybody was protected out of the deal. It didn't matter with me because I was a heel referee. I could have done whatever. You know, I was, you know, they had turned me back, and, you know, I was flip flopping. They didn't know what the hell I was going to do. But the only person that really didn't make sense was for Brett, because he come out and restarted something that wasn't, you know, there was nothing wrong with it, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, but watching back and watching the reaction and watching Sting got over out of it, Hogan retained his heat out of it, the crowd blew the roof off. Here we are 20 years later, still talking about it, maybe for the wrong reasons, but we're still talking about it.
Right.
So it wasn't the horrible cluster that I thought it was, and that
and
I felt
in
it
the
was.
Moment.
Oh yeah, man. Because I was just like, oh, I was just, I like professionalism, you know, and those guys are all consummate professionals, and it wasn't being displayed at this particular time, at the time that it should have been the most,
right.
You know, and everybody had their own agenda, and it was kind of hard, you know, it felt horrible. It really felt horrible. But watching it back and it felt horrible from the very beginning. But I said this as I watched it, you know, it was sluggish at first, and you can tell there was, you know, at the beginning of it. But it settled down and turned out to be a pretty decent little match.
Yeah.
The body wise, you know, the work of the match, you know, everything was solid, and Hogan got the heat, and, you know, and everybody was moving. It was, and the people was with it. You know, it was just very awkward at the beginning until we got off and got rolling. And, you know, and I think that's a lot, you know, with nerves too, when you're young and you're green and you go out in the ring and you're scared half to death and you're about to shit yourself. As soon as you lock up and start going, you forget about all that shit, and you're in the moment, you're going, you know, and you probably feel the same thing doing comedy on stage in front of people, you know.
Once
you
I get the first one up, I'm good.
Yeah, once you get it going and you get into your flow, then you're in your flow and you're good to go, man. But I never really got to get into my flow with that master because there was just so much politics and bullcrap that went along with it, you know, and it felt absolutely horrible. But watching it back, it wasn't nearly as horrible as it felt, you know. Then some things that needed to get accomplished out of it did get accomplished.
Adam also says a little food question for you before he gets out of here.
Oh, okay.
He said, what's your go-to order at Waffle House? My favorite is definitely the Texas cheesesteak melt. Nick, have you tried it?
No, I have not tried that, and I hadn't been to Waffle House in a while. But every time I went to Waffle House, I would get a pecan waffle. I would get two scrambled eggs with bacon, a side of grits.
That's it. That's the move.
And that'd be it, man, and a Coke to drink.
Are you? Do you eat the waffle as you go, or is it like kind of like a dessert?
No, I eat it as I go.
Okay, eggs and bacon and some waffle.
I'm not, you know, I'm not real weird. One of the people that the food can't touch and eat all of this first, then eat all of that next. You know, I don't pile it all up together, but you know, I'll eat a little of this and that. You know,
butter and syrup.
Oh yeah, butter and syrup. Mm-hmm.
By the way, I do love the Texas cheesesteak melt. It's a great sandwich, Adam. I've got that many times. My go-to now is a lot of the times I'll get the Texas cheesesteak hash brown bowl where it is all together. It's the hash browns and it scrambled egg on top, some cheesesteak and some bacon on top. I do like that one, Adam. Brett,
sounds pretty good.
It's real good, man. If I get a little froggy, I add a little A1 sauce.
Oh, hell, we're going to Waffle House.
You got me wanting Panda Express. Now I got you wanting some
Waffle House. Yeah.
Brad Stanton wants to know, Nick, did you ever have a wrestler try to change the finish of a match on you during the match?
No. Okay. Not ever.
What would I've you have done them, if they would have said,
I've had them call, I've had them, tell me over the earpiece, but one of the guys, they, you know, it was more of a rib on a young green baby face before where he thought he was doing the job and they would do a false finish and the heel would hold him down and he'd end up going over and jump up like, oh my God, you know, how am I supposed to do that? You know, that was an old rib and that happened before, but as far as somebody just getting in the ring and saying, nah, man, I'm going to do my own shit. That never happened. I never.
Probably a good thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's, there's more than one person in that ring, and if you're going to do that, you better be pretty. You better be able to take care of yourself.
All right, we are keeping the questions short. We got one more. Jack Spade, who always chimes in, loves the birthday talk. This episode, of course, is April 8th, and Jack said, "Nick, no birthdays on the 8th, but a couple around it. So wanted to know if you ever worked with any of these, and if so, if you've got a good story." Born in 1969 is Draws. Did you ever work with Draws?
No, I met him though when he came. When I went up there, he came. You know, he had already had his accident and stuff, and he'd come to the matches a couple of times. Seemed like a super nice guy, but I never met him or got to know him. You know, back when he was actually, you know, when he was working and doing his gig up there.
An incredible mind in wrestling, he said. Did you ever run into and work with Sanjay Dutt?
I met him. I have not had a chance to work with him, but when I met him, I told him that I saw a match that he had with, I'm trying to think of who the kid was that he had the match with. It was in TNA. It was a title match that happened in India.
Oh.
And it was Sanjay Dutt and one of the Latino kids. Oh, shit. I can't think of his name.
Juventud? Hector Garza?
No. It was more recent one. Oh, hell. When I think of his name, yeah. But anyway, it was a title match for the title that he held. And to me, it was as good of a match. It was like a modern day, I don't want to say Flair Steamboat or Macho Steamboat because they didn't have the ass behind it that those matches did, but that was damn close. Those kids laid it on the line, and it was It was bad. God, that drives me nuts that I can't think of that kid's name. And it's right on the tip of my tongue, and I've seen the kid. Oh gosh, but anyway, Sanjay, I got the chance to meet him at one of those autograph signing deals. It was in Winston-Salem. You know, they have the big Carolina gathering once a year in Winston-Salem, and he was there. And I pulled him off to the side, and I got to tell him, hey, look, man, I saw that particular match, and it made me a big fan. He was like, holy crap, dude. You know, because, you know, a lot of these kids have watched me since they were, you know, they were little, you know.
Sure.
In fact, I had Drew McIntyre tell me the same thing that night. I come up and shook his hand. He goes, oh, it's a pleasure to meet you. I've watched you since I was a kid, you know. Well, that's cool, you know. But, and man, I am going to think of that name, and on the next podcast, I will plug that match. I'm telling you, I enjoyed that match as much. I watched it, and I said, "Okay, these kids just put everything on the line," and it to me, it was like a modern day Macho Steamboat or a modern day Flair Steamboat. You know, they worked that hard,
yeah,
and it's different. Because, and I see the picture that they were trying to paint, because in modern wrestling, it started with Rock and Austin and those guys. And I don't agree with it, but I guess, you know, when you're experimenting, you try things that work. And I hate it when a guy hits somebody with his finish and has to hit him with it three or four times to win. You know, your finish is your finish. You
was
know,
it Loki?
Loki, exactly who it was.
Yeah. He had Loki. Some great matches with Loki.
Yes,
yeah.
Loki, yes, and Sanjay. I watched those two kids, man, and this is the title match that they had from in India. So if you figure out what year it was or whatever, check that out, because it is worth watching, man. And it's more spotty, it's more new school. And they repeated a few things. It felt to me repetitive, but I saw the story that they were painting. They were doing the same thing that Austin and Rock and them do, having to hit your big move more than one time to get this monster down. And I understand. I just, I'm more very protective in finishes. You work so hard to get them over, you know, sure. and take so many people to get them over. It just doesn't seem logical to have to hit one person with it three or four times, you know. You know, it's like, God almighty, I got a 357 Magnum here. I just put a hole in this guy that I can reach my arm through, but maybe I have to do it three more times, you know. That's what, I like protecting finishes more. But I did meet Sanjay, and he was a super nice kid. And when I heard he was working office as a producer and doing different stuff, then I thought that was a great fit for him, because at that show that I was at, he lined up. It was like like five cruiserweights and an elimination thing where action was going everywhere. And he was the captain of it. He's the one that put it all together, and it flowed, and it was boom, 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 and timing. You know, it's one of those, you know. And I'm not against car crash matches. There's a spot for everything on a card. You know, to me, a card should be a variety show. There should be funny ha-ha. There should be car crash. There should be technical. There should be sexuality. There should, you know, you should have the whole gamut, you know. And those kids gave them the high spot, I mean, just and technical. You know, that was that Sanjay, man, I'm spending a lot of time on the match. So y'all need to check that match out. It was excellent. And I'm glad the kid got a good break and is doing well.
Yeah, now he's in, of course, he's in AEW, and he's teamed up as the manager for Mr. Jeff Jarrett. So and his stable, cool. Always excellent to see him.
Cool. That's a bunch of people that know how to work right there. Get into a gig with them.
Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett, the new Satnam Singh, the big big Indian wrestler who played NBA basketball. He's a beast to see in person. He is a huge
big old dude.
Also coming up, he said, might be past your time, but just in case, did you ever cross paths with Bianca Belair? Who, of course,
no, never did. I'm a big fan of hers, though.
Yeah.
She got a great look, very strong, and she represents her brand and herself very, very well. Now, you never hear of her, you know, trouble or any crap, you know, and good with the kids. And, you know, she's what you want out of a champion. And, I never got to meet her, or, you know, she's more, I was out. Well, I had back injury. So I was out for about 2 years. You know, I gave him my notice and I finished in 09, but in 07, that's when I hurt my back and I had back surgery. And so I was off and on for a couple of years. And when some of those kids were starting to come in through the training deal, and I didn't get to meet any of them. In fact, I just met CM Punk one time, you know,
really
before I was out. Yeah. So he was just getting cranked up there. So,
And last but not least, he said it would have been on April 10th, the 70th birthday of Paul Bearer. Do you have any good Paul stories?
Paul was a super nice guy. You know, I hated that he had so much. I love the story about him and Barry and getting it got him fired, but damn it, he spoke his mind. He was Paul Bearer. He was working. He had the headsets on and was working in a gorilla position at the time. I think he was given time cues or something at the time. And Kevin Dunn went off about something and he had to relay the message. And I guess he didn't realize Kevin Dunn could hear him too. Right. So he said something. He goes, "Okay, guys, Bucky Beaver's all pissed off." And he referred to Kevin Dunn as Bucky Beaver over the microphone. Right. And of course, Kevin was just mortified by that. And it's him or me. You have to fire him or I'm out. You know,
man.
Yeah. What a dick. He is Bucky bitch-ass Beaver.
Percy Pringle, man, a Mobile native, lived and born and died there, so he was always a legend here. I mean, he's a legend, period, but a legend coming up in wrestling in the South, and always a pleasure to hear any fun stories about Paul Bearer. All right, we got the questions out of the way. We're going to dive into our Sweet 16 referee bracket, Mr. Nick Patrick. And I've narrowed them down, Sweet 16, put them in a bracket. So we're going to go through each matchup. We're going to see who you think wins that matchup. And then we'll get an ultimate winner here at the end of the episode. How about that?
Okay. Now, I'm going to, just so this will be fun and interesting still, because Nick Patrick would pick Nick Patrick right off the bat and would rig the whole thing.
You can still do that.
I'm tempted to do that.
Well, let's see how it shakes out.
And I was tempted to put my name on there more than once, too. You know, I was going to put the regular Nick Patrick on there. I was going to put NWO Nick Patrick on there. And I was going to put the masked referee Nick Patrick on there from the NWO gimmick when they had the masked guy. You know, nobody ever knew who that guy was. But if I was going to get my name on this gimmick and win it, I was going to let that cat right out of the bag.
All right. We got – look, it can still shake out that way.
Never know. You know, I'm tough.
Here's what I did. Since we've got two Hebners, I've got the Earl bracket and the Dave bracket side by side. All right.
Okay.
You got to have one seed. So I got Hebners at the top for each one, and we're going to go through. All right. Our first matchup, this is going to be a tough one for you. Your buddy, it's the one seed versus the eight seed, Earl Hebner versus Teddy Long.
Oh, man.
That's a tough one.
Okay, we're voting for refs.
Yeah, so just refs.
Just refs. I'm going to have to go with Earl.
Okay.
Teddy was great, and he learned a lot, but Earl had a long, long ride there, and Teddy's refereeing blossomed him into bigger and other things, you know.
Managing, so, GM, anything you can think of.
Yeah, it taught him the timing and the psychology and the work performing aspect of what we do and presentation part of it to where, you know, but Earl, man, Earl's still going. So
Teddy, your riding partner for so many years as well. Yeah. So I knew that was going to be a tough one for you.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we got a 5-4 matchup in the Earl bracket. We've got, Tim White versus Jimmy Corderas. What do we got here?
Woo, man. I'd have to almost flip a coin on that one. And I know Jimmy.
A tough one.
I know Jimmy. And Jimmy would say, give it to Timmy White, you know, because he's such a super nice guy, man, and so laid back and cool. So that being said,
what are you going with?
I'm going to go ahead and go with Timmy White on that one because I think that's what Jimmy Corderas would want me to do.
Tell me about Jimmy Corderas. When you think about him, what do you think of?
Super nice guy, smart to the business. He does his own podcast thing he's got going on, and And he was up there, man. He was one of those guys that was always in the rotation, working in the top matches, and he earned his spot. You know, he's an entertainer too. He does different acting things. And Jimmy's super people, man. And one of the guys that I really was happy to get to know when I was up there.
All right. Next up, we got a 3-6 matchup. In the 3 seed, we got Tommy Young. And in the 6 seed, we got Mickey Henson.
Ooh, that's even tougher than the last one, man.
Is it?
Yeah, because I tell you, I'm going to go with Mickey on that one.
Mickey, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Mickey. I mean, Tommy did his thing, and he was great, and both of them were. But Mickey, stepped in at a time, and Goldberg chose Mickey. And Goldberg was young and greener than goose shit and being pushed like a, you know, had the rocket booster strapped to his ass. And he needed somebody in there with him that could talk and he could listen, you know, if they needed the message that he was comfortable with, that made him feel comfortable in that ring. And Mickey J was able to do that. And that was a very important piece at that time for WCW. And that, you know, it wasn't just Goldberg. He did all kinds of main events, but that in particular to me stands out. You know, his ability, you know, because certain guys are comfortable with other people. And, you know, and I put Mickey, because I assigned refs back then. I put Mickey in there with Goldberg the first time, and it just clicked for Bill, and he asked for him every time after that. So, you know, I just got to where I just went ahead and put him in there. And you didn't have to ask. I knew, you know.
What do you think of when you think of Tommy Young?
Tommy was a super nice guy, and we got along really well. I learned a lot from him. When I first started in WCW, I learned a lot from him because I hadn't ever been on a big travel schedule, you know, nation worldwide company before. You know, I worked for Georgia Championship Wrestling. That was as big as I was. And we traveled from Georgia up to, you know, to Ohio and Michigan, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, you know, every other week to Pip Pip. You know, that, man, that ain't travel. Okay. I didn't have any idea what travel was, you know. And but he helped me out a lot, and he was good friends with Pop, Tommy was a good guy. Still is a good guy. I like him a lot. Good guy.
So Mickey is advancing now that one. All right, at the bottom of the Earl bracket, a tough one here. The number 7 seed, Charlie Smith, going against the 2 seed, Mr. Mike Chioda.
Ooh.
Hmm.
Mike, that's two different. It's like saying which if you like a rock guitarist better than a blues guitarist. You know, they both are similar genres, but they're different. You know, and Charlie come from that old school age and did all those badass old Georgia matches that were, you know, Pop. My dad wrestled a 2-hour time limit draw one time with a guy. Yeah, with a guy named Tommy Siegler. And
he reffed the ref?
Yeah.
2 hours.
Yeah. They did an angle where they went through the first time, they went like 30 minutes, then they went 30 minutes through, then they went an hour through, and they come back and went 2 hours through. And they stopped it because they had the police come in and say, well, the lease on the building is run up, the time to run up. And boom, that's how they got out of that. And the people still wanted more. So it was
that's wild.
And it wasn't Tommy Siegler either that he wrestled. It was I have to think of his name. It'll come to me later.
What year was that about?
It was early 60s because I was a little 60s. I was a little kid. I was a little kid. And it would have to be in and it wouldn't have been early 60s. It would have been late 60s, possibly early 70s.
Okay.
Because we moved to Georgia when I was a little kid in 69. So it was either, and it might have been, you know.
69, 70, somewhere
anywhere
there?
It was anywhere between 68 and 72. It was in that period of time.
2-hour match. All right, so what you got? This is a tough one. Chioda or Charlie, who's going forward?
I'm going to have to go with Chioda on this one.
Okay. So when you think of Charlie, you said he's old school. What made him stand out? What made him one of your top?
I've known him since I was a little boy, and we did a lot of traveling. My dad, he'd ride with my dad, and
funny
I knew
guy,
him.
Stern guy. What was
funny guy, just off the hook, man. I remember I was still in elementary school, man. It was the summertime. Pop would take me on the road with him in different towns. So we'd drive into Savannah, Georgia from Atlanta. And back then we didn't have a nice interstate like we do now all the way. There was back roads, you know? And so Charlie falls asleep in the back seat, you know, and we're going down the road and we're about halfway down and we're way out in the country down in South Georgia. And Pop called me Joy at the time. He goes, "Hey Joy," I said, "you want to drive?" And I went, "Yeah, hell yeah, I'll drive." And when I said that, that sleeping, snoring Charlie come up out of that back seat. "No, no, hell no, I'll let me drive it. No, don't put that key there. I'll let me do it. I'll drive."
That's great.
Oh, yeah. Pop used to mess with him, tease him all the time. And Pop was a river. But Charlie, super nice guy. That's what I learned. A lot of my cussing I learned was from listening to Pop and Charlie. You would think they hated each other. When they call each other on the telephone, they would cuss each other out like just two dog. "Why, you filthy, nasty, lying, thieving, blah, 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 blah. Why, you go to hell, you old time." And they just would just, and then they just laugh like hell. They were greatest buddies.
Couldn't wait to hang out.
Every time they would call each other, it would be that cuss thing. It was like, man, they sound like Red Fox on steroids, these two guys, man.
All right, let's go over to the Dave Hebner bracket, the Dave Hebner side of the bracket. And by the way, isn't it crazy that we could have put Baby Hebner in here as well? I mean, they still got it going, man.
There's a bunch of guys. There's a bunch of guys that could have been in that thing. I can think of five or six guys that could have been in there.
All right, here we go. The Dave Hebner side. We're going to go to the 1 seed Dave Hebner versus the 8 seed Ronnie West.
Man, that's tough too. But I'm going to go with That's hard to say because Ronnie West molded a lot of my early career when I first started. When I first started at Georgia Championship Wrestling, Ronnie was working as a referee, but starting in the office too. And the office was starting to take over so much that he just kind of was wanting to phase out of the ring, and that helped elevate me, position wise. But when I very first started, anything that was complicated or anything that might end up in a ruckus or something that they needed somebody more experienced out there, Ole would put Ronnie out there, and that was cool, you know, because I got to learn some different things. But I think I'm going to have to go with Hebner on this one, and right. I'm going to tell you why, because of the performance level that he did on that Macho Man Steamboat match.
Okay.
If you watch Macho Man Steamboat, Dave Hebner's a referee for that. He's there on every move, every spot. Boom, boom, boom. And then that was a smooth timing, flowing dance. It took more than just two people to do. And if you watch that from a referee standpoint, that was about as good as it gets, man. Wow, so for that Dave's reason alone. That ruse alone, I put him in there.
All right, we got a 5-4 matchup. The 5 seed Billy Silverman, versus the 4 seed Lil Nate Charles Robinson.
Lil Nate, I have to go with Lil Nate.
All right, well, tell me about Billy Silverman then. What do you think of when you think of Billy?
Well, I think of Billy. I think of back in the WCW days. He wasn't with us a whole lot in WWE. He was in WWE before us. He started there before he came to WCW. He was like one of the commission refs or something up there. And he got, a lot of different work up there at that time. And he came to work for WCW. But when I think of Billy, I just think he was a super nice guy and quiet, but able to get in there, and to break in and to become a high-level, A-level referee starting in from the commissioner spot is commendable, because there's not a lot of really good commissioner referees out there. A lot of them stink. They're terrible, honestly, and they get forced to use them, and they put them on the card and say, "Oh God, let's put him in his first match and don't involve him," because they don't have the timing, and it's not that they're terrible. I'm not going to retract that. They're terrible.
Yeah, just do.
They suck.
All right. So that he went an unnatural route, kind of. than a lot of the other guys.
Yeah, and made it.
We'll get to Charles in a little bit as he continues through the bracket. Our next up, the 3 seed Randy Anderson versus the 6 seed Brian Hildebrand.
Have to go with Randy.
All right,
he had a longer run, and I love both of those guys, man.
Tell
great
me about
guys.
Brian Hildebrand.
Brian was a great ref. He refed. He worked. He did a gimmick up in Smoky Mountain. This deck. He was a Ninja Turtle. I don't know if you ever heard about that
Ninja
gimmick for Cornette. Remember Cornette back years ago had a Ninja
yes.
Turtle? Well, that was Brian Hildebrand.
Really?
Yes, and he became a referee for us at WCW. And he was. And we nicknamed him Spock because he was really quiet and stayed to himself. And we at TV days, a lot of people just kind of sit out in the arena, you know, to kill time, you know. And he was sitting out there when he first started with us, and he was reading a book from Leonard Nimoy called I Am Spock. And so we saw that book, and we nicknamed him Spock from that
on.
We call him Spock all the time. Yeah.
All right. So, Brian, good ref, tough matchup, but Randy Anderson going to make the advancement there. And then at the bottom of the Dave Hebner side of the bracket, we got number 7, Scrappy McGowan versus 2 seed, Nick Patrick. Who's advancing, Nick?
Well,
say
I tell you what.
It's you.
I was going to throw myself under the bus, but I'm going to have to wait for another round to throw myself under the bus.
Well, tell me about
Scrappy. I love Scrappy to death. We
tell
worked
me about
together.
Scrappy.
We worked together in the Georgia Championship Wrestling days, and he was great. You know, he had a family, and he was one of those guys that just, you know, it just didn't want to be away from his family. So once we started expanding and going out on the road, Scrappy worked less, you know. But he could have gone as far as he wanted to go because he was an excellent ref. He worked in Georgia, he worked in Florida, he worked different places. Super nice guy, excellent, beautiful family. Got a son that referees on the Indies that lived out in Alabama somewhere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Scrappy McGowan, what a great name. All right, so look, we got through the first round. Not many upsets. The only slight upset was a 5-4 matchup with Tim White beating Jimmy Corderas. Everything else fell with the seeds. I can't wait to see how that shakes out the second round. You ready for these? These are going to be some juicy matchups here, Nick. Here we go. Now we've got, as we advance through on the Earl side, we got the 1 seed Earl taking on number 5 seed Tim White. Who gets it here?
Have to go Earl.
All right. Tell me about Tim White when you think of him as a ref.
I love Tim White as a ref. He was a super nice guy. When I went up there, he was so cool, so helpful. He had made it up to being an agent at the time because he hurt his shoulder doing a match with, you know, that big match where the cage comes down, but it's not on the ring. It goes all the way around. It's on the floor, all the way around the ring.
Right.
I forgot what the hell it's called. But anyway, Michael Hayes helped come up with this bump for him to take where he got hit and went off of the apron and had to jump and hit the cage, you know. And he blew his shoulder out trying to do it, you know. So I get there, and I end up having that match, and they want me to get juice and everything, right? And Michael Hayes comes up with and wants me to try this bump with a blade in my hand at a WrestleMania. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And I think it's the first time ever they had a referee tell them something, but then I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. It's enough that I'm going to do this. You know, you should be happy as F that I'm going to do that. But to do that and let you shoot me out of a can, you already had one guy blow his shoulder out. And how do you think I'm going to be able to do this safely? Can you tell me that? You know, and that's insane. No, all you have to do, and it's Undertaker hitting me, for God's sake. All he's got to do is that, and I'll act like I got shot with a 357 Magnum. You know, you don't have to launch me off of the apron and have to do that. That's stupid, you know? And I was going to get juice, and then I'd have been down, and they wouldn't even have showed it. You know, so what? I just told him, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, and nobody said shit to me about it either.
And Tim did it.
Tim did it before I did it and blew his shoulder out. That's how he had to quit reffing because he
2002.
Doing that stupid ass bump that Michael Hayes wanted him to take.
Triple H and Chris Jericho, Judgment Day, Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, it must have been.
By the way, it should be stated, if people don't know, of course, He was a part-time ref and Andre the Giant's agent. And then shortly after Andre's death in 93, became full-time referee and did a lot for Shawn Michaels as well. And, of course, if anybody, the legendary Hell in a Cell match, 1998, Mankind and Undertaker, where Mankind, of course, falls through the top of the cell. Tim White is the ref for that legendary match as well, and almost called it when Foley fell through and decided Foley begged him not to. So he is in the middle of a bunch of legendary stuff.
And he's the owner of the Friendly Tap. So yeah, he was, I mean, anyway.
Come on. So
you can't go wrong with that.
All right. So Earl's advancing there. We go on to our next matchup. Here's going to be a tough one. Number three, Mickey Henson versus number two, Mike Chioda. Who advances from this matchup?
I think I'm going to have to – I love Mickey. You know, we were great buddies, but I have to go with Chioda on that one too.
All right, tell me about Mickey. What was his style in the ring?
Nah, his style, he just – you know, he
white guy, is he loud or
– No, Mickey was he'd go with the flow. Easy to get along with. He was never loud or, you know, he liked to get his drink on, smoke his cigarettes, and travel, smoke a little of the other – you know, yeah. Have a good time. You know, he was a laid back guy, man. He was one of those Florida Keys guys. You know what I mean? He lived in the Florida Keys and just mellow, laid back, really super, super nice guy, man. He was Jimmy Buffett, the parrot heads.
Parrot heads.
He was the biggest parrot head that I know.
What, really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
When did you first meet him? When did you first start running in?
I met him in, couldn't tell you the year, but it was in WCW.
Okay.
When I met him.
He was in WCW 92 to 2001 and then 05 to 09 in WWE. Yeah. All right. So Mike is advancing there. So we got, that's going to be a 1-2 seed over there. And we're going to go over to your side of the bracket first. Number one seed, Dave Hebner, taking on Little Nate, number four seed, Charles Robinson. Who advances there? Oh.
I'm gonna go with Charles.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with Charles because nobody really understands how hard it is to ride the wave up there, man. And he's still riding. He's still riding the wave.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah, you know, you won't meet a nicer guy than Charles. You know, he, you know, anything good that comes his way, he deserves it. He's a super nice guy.
Still working with the ring crew, everything, man.
Yeah, does the whole thing. Puts up, tear down, goes out, works main events, do whatever you need him to do, he's there. You know, that's why I put his name in there.
When he met me, and every time I've seen him meet anybody else, he acts like y'all have been friends for 20 years.
Yeah.
Talks to you, just a great dude. So we got an upset here. We got Charles Robinson. So tell me a little bit more about Dave Hebner. You talk about that legendary match that you always put him with and how, hey, that's a match to watch for any referee, anybody that wants to appreciate good referee work. Tell me some more things about Dave Hebner.
Dave was super cool. He was the guy when you come in and you're on the road and you're wanting to save money and say, okay, where does everybody stay in this town? And he could give you the hookup on the cheap hotels. The cheap hotels that were still doable, you know, that you wasn't going to get robbed. You know what I mean? But you could save your money and there would be close. You know, he could show you how to save a dollar on the road, man. But he was a super nice guy. And, you know, if he liked you and took you under his wing, then you could go far because you'd know where all the – you know where all the good hotels were, all the good restaurants were, and he could acclimate you to the WWE way of life up there, you know. And he was, like I said, he was one of the him and Earl both, so, you know, two of the nicest guys. And really, those are two more people that I was really glad to get to know. I never really met them until I went up there, and I'd heard of them, you know, but I never got to know them. And getting to know them, man, both super super cool guys.
Incredible, by the way, when you think about not only that Savage Steamboat match at WrestleMania 3 in 86, but of course 88 comes along. We have WWF, the main event. He does the championship between Hogan and Andre. And of course, that's when they did the switch with Earl. And now we've got different Hebner's coming out. Just an incredible, incredible storyline, which has
wrestling history,
blew our
man.
Mind, man.
Yeah, wrestling history, man. It's,
and they did the Evil Twin storyline, had to get investigative reporting for the magazine. Just incredible stuff from Dave Hebner. That's why him and Earl are all-timers there. They were involved in some groundbreaking stuff for television. All right, next matchup at the bottom. We got the number 3 seed, Randy Anderson, taking on the number 2 seed, Nick Patrick. Who's going forward?
Okay, this will be the time that I'm going to put somebody over.
No.
Randy was my man, and there's no possible way that I would have him do a job for me back then, right now, in the future, or any other time in life, man. He was just such a super nice guy.
And, is he advancing?
I'm gonna go ahead and let Randy Anderson bump me out of this thing right here, because it would take somebody that I respected as a close friend for me to bump myself out of the spot, because I'm the greatest of all time. Woo!
So you're laying down. You're just telling us you're laying down.
I'm just telling you that I wouldn't. Yeah, I'm conceding to Randy Anderson on this one, man.
This is the finger poke of doom right here. You're laying down, son.
Yeah.
All right. So Randy Anderson, we'll get some more about Randy in a little bit as we continue. We're down to our final four here. Good matchups, Nick, for the final spot. Let's go first on the other side. Mr. the 1 and 2 seed, Earl Hebner and Mike Chioda, who advances to the championship.
Mike, I love you, dude, but I'm going to have to go with Earl.
Okay. Earl advances. Tell me about Mike Chioda. What you think of when you think of him in the ring?
I think Mike was just great timing and you know, one of those guys that was there. He'd worked his way up to being a main event ref. You know, so there was guys that wanted him in their matches, you know, and he was that good, you know, and had a mind for it. Super nice. You know, he was one of the guys that was really super nice to me when I first went up there, you know, because when we first went up there with WCW, everybody felt they had to bust our balls, you know, but there was the ref family wasn't like that, you know. All the refs just, you know, they were just, we all looked out after each other. And they didn't know, there was nobody referee-wise felt that they had to bust our balls when we first went up there. You know, crew-wise, yeah, and guy-wise, and office-wise, you know, and fan-wise, yeah. But referee-wise, no, it wasn't that way at all. We had it was a brotherhood. It was, that part I thought was very cool.
Did you know Mike before you started working there?
Didn't know him at all.
Really?
I'd heard of him, but I didn't know him. Never met him.
I find it ironic that both of y'all spent quality time traveling with Mr. Teddy Long. That says a lot about all three of y'all's personalities there. All right, so Earl's moving on. Nice run for Mike. But Earl's in the championship. And on the other side, whoo, can't wait to see you pick here. The 4 seed, Charles Robinson, versus the 3 seed, Randy Anderson. Woo! Oh, tough match.
I'm going to tell you a little story. When Charles first started, Randy used to bust his balls. Randy would have Charles running, doing laundry and running, doing just, and Charles was just so happy to be there that he was just doing it, you know. And Randy had a good thing going for a while until I don't know how it come to an end exactly. Somebody finally smartened him up, or Randy just finally said, okay, damn, I can't make him quit, so I'm going to just leave him alone, you know. But for that reason alone, I'm going to go with Charles. He's still riding the wave, and he took a whole bunch of crap from people just to get to where he is, and he deserves to be where he is, you know, and he's still riding that wave. So I'm going to go with Charles Robinson on this one.
All right. Well, tell me more about Randy as he exits the list. You mentioned
Randy
earlier,
was
mentor.
Such a,
you respect him, and what else?
Oh, yeah. Super nice guy. He used to, back in the day, back when JYD was working for Watts, and he bought that big Mercedes from him. Randy was just driving that Mercedes while they were driving everywhere, partying their asses off, man.
And Randy was the driver?
Oh, Randy was the driver. Man, that dude could shoot pool like almost like nobody I've ever seen, man.
Really?
I mean, oh my God. I mean, he was so good. If you went shooting with him, you'd have to, you know, I wasn't shooting pool, but if you knew he was back there shooting pool and he's your buddy, you might have to help him get out of there. You know,
oh, really?
he was that good. I saw him one time. We was at this place and he drank so much beer that the damn cue stick was all that was holding him up. And it came to his shot and it came up and he jacked that cue stick up and went bam. And he did one of those goofy ass trick shots where the ball jumps over the top of a ball and hits his ball and it went in. And I'm like, holy shit. The stick was holding you up 2 minutes ago, you know, and you just made that shot. So yeah, he was but super nice guy, and his family, such a sweet family. And when we lost him, that was one of them that really hurt, man, because of his family. And super nice guy. I don't want to go down that sad road. I'm just going to remember the good times, man.
Was he already Pee-wee by the time you knew him?
Yeah, I always known him as Pee-wee.
Childhood friend of Arne Anderson, of course.
Story too from back in the day. They had a story about when they were kids, and they were swimming at some water hole up there with a bunch of bikers, and one of the bikers jumped on Arne and was dunking him, holding him under the water, and Randy grabbed a brick and bashed the sumbitch in the head, and a guy didn't
really?
Make it, evidently. Yeah. You know, and there was a big to-do about that. I don't know what all came of it, but Randy didn't end up doing no time, and I don't think anybody reported that he did it, but he was saving Arne's ass, you know, and the guys, wow, they were drowning him, bam, and yeah, that was one of the big ribs back in the day that they had. You know, Arne said one time or two that Randy's grandmother had a big freezer on her front porch at their old country home, and they got so drunk one night they come home, and Randy said, "I got to get cool if I throw up," and he crawled his little ass in that freezer and was laying in that damn freezer. And thank God, I guess Arne was smart enough to open up the lid and tell him he would, because if he closed that lid, he'd have suffocated.
He would have fell asleep in the freezer.
Yeah, he curled up in the damn freezer to get cool.
Man, of course, he's in some iconic WCW moments.
Oh, of course.
He is the sixth.
I had a match with him in WCW, too.
You bumped him and knocked him out.
Well, he knocked me out, but he cheated some, bitch.
Oh, yeah. I was sold out, NWO. He was also there, of course, when Hogan turns heel. He is the seventh man in the ring for that six-man tag. That was when NWO started. So just iconic moments in his career, before he had his cancer forced him to retire in 99. So incredible career for Mr. Randy Anderson. So we're down to the finals. Talk about it. Earl Hebner, the one seed, and the surprising four seed, Charles Robinson, in the championship. Nick, who goes down as the greatest referee ever in your bracket?
Well, it's down to those two guys. I think I'm going to have to go with Earl on this one.
We hadn't talked about him. We've just advanced him through. Of course, he is iconic. Everybody that watches wrestling knows Earl Hebner. Talk about Earl Hebner, what he means to you. What do you think of when you think of Earl?
Just another super nice guy, man. When I went up there, he was one of the guys that welcomed me with open arms and showed me the ropes, how things worked, what they expected, what they didn't like, what they did like, you know. You know, like his brother, you know, where to go, where to stay, you know, how to plug yourself, how to get in you know, the mix there. And he's super nice. And I had a match with him, too. We had a fun match, you know. And Laurinaitis was actually the agent for it, which it's one of the few times I'll ever give him credit for anything because he's such a douche. But he was actually the agent for us. And it was a fun little match, man. And we didn't do a whole lot of technical crap, you know, but I got to be an asshole and get beat. And my biggest bump, I think I took, I did that thing where he would beat me up in the corner and I was down on the floor and I reached up and grabbed the top rope and he grabbed my feet, did that big whip thing out of the corner. And I took, that was my biggest bump I took for him. But we had fun, man. I got my stuff in. And he got his stuff in. We got a hell of a little pop out of it, man. It was got to work on pay-per-view.
How about that? Of course, he debuted in that Hulk Hogan and Andre 1988 matchup on NBC.
Yeah, what a way to come in, huh? Talk about coming in swinging.
To debut. Of course, he was also early. He was in the I Quit match at Starrcade 85 between Tully and Magnum. He is ringside at the first ever War Games match at the 87 Great American Bash. He's also at the final match of the Bunkhouse Stampede in 88. Just iconic, iconic moments throughout his career, him and his brother. And so, yeah, he's the one seed. No surprise there, but that was a good bracket. What you think about that? Those some hard matchups when you narrowed that down.
Yeah, there was a couple of them that I could have just flipped a coin on, you know, because you know, both of them were there. Were several of them that were just really pretty even. But now looking at it at the end, I'm kind of, you know, Earl or Dave, one of those two should have come out on top just out of seniority and the places, you know, the history that they made from what we just talked about, you know. Yeah. And all the main events between those two guys that they worked together up there and for the Crocketts and the other territories that they worked, because those guys worked territories before WWE.
And you know, later, so, Earl's in the TNA Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's been everywhere. Yeah, he's been everywhere, man. So, yeah, I think you guys should be glad that Nick Patrick didn't just rig the whole damn thing.
I thought you were going to hail out.
I had to pick the spot for me to go ahead and do the job. And I wasn't going to do it in round one now. That's what
All right. Well, nicely done. I might try to tweak this list and see if I can go over with Kyoto or put it online and let everybody vote for everything. That was a fun little list. Nick, another great one. I know we didn't get a lot of questions in, everybody. We'll get back to more questions next time right here in the middle of the college basketball madness. I wanted to get a fun bracket in, do a little something different for this episode. But, Nick, before we get out of here, one more time, tell us about that Big Deep South Wrestling event that's coming up this weekend.
It's going to be on Sunday the 15th, the 14th, excuse me. We had it booked for the 13th. And it turned out that there's a big road race right down there to the start and the finish line. It's right there by Das Barbecue.
Really?
And they're going to have a bunch of the roads closed down and stuff. So
you're going to go Sunday the 14th this time.
Yeah, we're going Sunday 14th, 3 o'clock. And we got a great card we were fortunate. We were still able to get everybody that we had initially booked. The card is like, as we spoke, there may be one change, but that would be it. It would be in an earlier match. So main event wise and up and down the card, you're getting what we advertised, and it's going to be a hell of a card and a great time. And our last show there, we had over 400 folks there. We had a little under five, but there were between four and five there, man. And it was a good time. When the weather is nice, it's going to be nice again on the 14th. We've been checking the weather out. So come down and have a great time, because when I started this back, I didn't want to just have wrestling matches where you go, like, go to a high school gym and sit and watch, or go to an armory and sit and watch. I want it to be more of an event type of thing, you know? And that's what we've kind of captured out here at Das Barbecue. It's an event, man. When you go out there, you get to meet, and it's more, you can get to actually walk up to the guys and talk to them, you know? It's more, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Yeah, accessible. Yeah, that's a good word for it. And it's a combination of old school and new school, and the people are loving it, and we're growing a hell of a strong base. And I want anybody that wants to come down and have a great time, come down and be a part of it, man. At Das Barbecue on Memorial Drive in Atlanta, Georgia. It is hot, and we are rolling, and we're right there at the entrance of the old Oakland Cemetery. It's like
historic.
Yeah, historic. All the big dignitaries and musicians. You know, there's all. If you was a big star or something from Atlanta, that's where they. You know, I think Kenny Rogers is buried in there. It's just dignitaries from years past. That which really makes for a cool Halloween show we do. You know, we did last year. But come check us out, man. We got a great card, and we got to come be part of the Deep South family. We're growing, getting stronger every time, and it is a good time. Great barbecue, great wrestling, and a great time.
We are Deep South. They're on Instagram. They're on YouTube. You can get their website as well. And always remember, ain't that right, Nick? If they tell them they listen to the mailbag, they get in free.
Daggum right. Come on in. You listen, say, hey, I listen to the mailbag. They'll say, well, come on in.
They'll usher you right in, brother.
Yeah, I'll help you. Right, I'll help you find a seat if you want to come tell me that.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for your questions. I hope you enjoyed the bracket. Give us some feedback on it, and we'll read some of those feedback on the next episode. And also, be sure you leave your question for Mr. Nick Patrick, and he will answer it in 2 weeks as we come back Nick, thanks for your time, brother. Fun time.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Hey, thanks for the questions, too. That was fun.
Great bracket. Yeah, we got some new people listening. That's always a good sign, so send us your questions in. We'll be back here again in 2 weeks for the man, the myth, the legend, the heel himself, Mr. Nick Patrick. I am Cassio. You're listening to Monday Mailbag with Nick Patrick.